He said he bought her something in Salem, and we never know what it was.
Funny.
I want to know what he bought her in Salem.
Honestly, I don't think he had anything. I think he was going to try and like kiss her and say, this is what I got for you.
Was it going to be like, this is what I brought you. D's nuts.
Oh, Summer. Maybe. Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It says that the last passenger pigeon thought to be the last passion. Wow. I'm having a hard time too.
Say it again, girl.
Martha thought to be the last passenger pigeon. Died on September 1st in 1914.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 318 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
And there's a little bit of a hesitation there. So I think she was trying to remember to say Shimmer or Summer.
Nope.
Okay.
And now on to our read-along. This week we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along, beginning with chapter 77, entitled A Package from London.
So, I understand, like, when you have a character, like, not all characters have to be named. A man who was a peddler came up and delivered the mail or whatever. Like, we didn't necessarily need the names, but it's fun when Diana feels the need to give us names of rando people, and they're so entertaining. So this peddler who brought the mail was named Jethro Wainwright.
As you do.
This guy arrives at the Ridge, and he gives Claire a package. And she starts to chat with the peddler's donkey. And Clarence replies, and out come Roger and Bree, Mr. Bug, and Jamie. They gather around this package, guessing whom it could be from. From whom it could be. I don't care. Whatever. This is legit a pastime of theirs. So Roger and Bree have their whole, what do you miss? Actually, and Claire and Bree have it too. They've, at least in the show, they've played it. So there's all kinds of different things, of course, for a time traveler, it's a little bit different, or they have maybe additional games. But for people who live in literally the boonies, this is one of the most fun games, I guess. So they all take turns.
What else are they going to do?
That's what I'm saying. So they...
I mean, other than, you know, getting 30 gallons of honey out of your hives or making 30 dozen candles.
All your spare time, what
else are you going to do?
So they each take time, like, feeling it, shaking it, weighing it, like, guessing. So everyone is given...
I mean, we do this too sometimes, but just for those, like, white elephant games that work, right?
That's true. So everyone is given a generous amount of time to, you know, to get all the guesses out. They decide to open it after supper, and Claire does the honors. She unknots the twine, and of course, hello, backwoods, like... Nothing, first of all, like, not that you have to
nothing
have
nothing is wasted.
Because anything more than just petrochemical stuff can become litter, right? But yes, so back in that day, I mean, I'm sure they still have like burn piles and stuff, but not of inorganic things. Like, pretty much everything at this point was still organic-ish. Anyway, yes, they don't waste anything. She tucks it somewhere. It ends up being a wooden box inside a dark red velvet bag. Quote, he pulled this out, opened its drawstring, and slowly drew out a thing. Unquote. Exactly. Of course, Jamie knows what it is. He says, it's a planispheric astrolabe, duh. And it's got loads of gold on it. Diggity. Of course it was from Lord John. Kind of. And his note, the note, it's actually from Willie. It's about to come out. Remember at this point, or at least I had forgotten, because again, it's been a little bit since I read this book and definitely like paid attention to it and read it closely or whatever. Brianna does not yet know about Willie. So Claire's like hiding her face. Jamie gives good face. Claire does not. So she's like looking everywhere, covering her face, looking down into her skirt, whatever. So William Ransom, of course, we all know this. Age 15, and this is the description or the explanation she is given. William Ransom, 15 years old, is not really Gray's son, but his stepson. And that's all they're sharing. Now, he'd recalled that Bree had said she knew how to survey. And so that's why he'd wanted this. So Jamie shows Bree how to tell the time with this instrument. And that's another clock. I mean, predominantly, it's a big thing in the TV series, but you know, since the TV series makes a thing out of it, I kind of notice it a little bit more now in the reading, but this is another clock. And whenever we see or hear a clock in or around the time travelers, it's kind of entertaining. Claire wonders at their preoccupation for measuring time. Evidently, it had been a while for all of them since they'd last truly known what time it was, wherever that may have been. So what else can you do with this planispheric astrolabe? You can find your position on land or sea, tell the time, find a star in the sky. But Jamie wanted it to survey the land on their two land grants because they were running out of time. Quote, the king may fall, but the land will stay. And if we are to hold this land through it all, we must have it properly surveyed and registered. Unquote. So here is, again, pre-Culloden Jamie, preparing his family and keeping his land safe, doing what he can anyway, in any way or in all the ways he can before a war comes.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I am, she knows about Lord John's son. He told her about him when she was pregnant with Jimmy and forcing him to be her bridegroom. Yeah.
Yes. When they were camped out together for a little bit.
Yeah. And then she was asking him, you know, could you love another man's son? And he was like, I do. And that's when he told her about Willie. So I think he already knows. She still doesn't know that it's Jamie's the bio dad.
Yeah.
But that's for another book, people.
Could you, would you, with a moose? I could, I would, with its caboose. Sorry. That's okay in my brain. Lord John.
That's a weird thing to come to your brain.
Not really. Caboose, Lord John. It's not that weird. It's early. So it's actually not that early.
No, it's not.
Okay.
All right. And that was chapter 77. Moving along to chapter 78, entitled No Small Thing, which should be subtitled Only Big Thing.
Brianna goes to the big house to borrow a book. She chooses Moll Flanders. And as she's choosing it, a crash from the surgery has her running in there. Jemmy had gotten into the surgery, opened up a cupboard, and broke a bottle of honey and disturbed a number of things, and was now sitting in the middle of it. He was covered in it, and honey was everywhere. She checks to make sure he's all right, and then smacks him on the bum. He'd pulled out dried herbs and ripped the gauze shelving, and salt had been thrown about. Bottles and jars were turned over. Quote, worst of all, her mother's amulet lay on the floor, the little leather patch torn open, flat and empty. Scattered bits of dried plants, a few tiny bones, and other debris lay strewn around it. Unquote.
Yeah, see, the amount of havoc he is able to wreak before she even notices,
I know,
is astounding.
Yerp.
He manages to do all of that and swallow a precious gem. And then the only reason that anyone came running is because he happened to drop the honey. Lord knows how long it would have gone on if he hadn't dropped that jar of honey.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you should always pay attention when it's too quiet.
Yes, too quiet. Yes. Uh-huh. Michael M. writes, we begin this chapter with Jemmy making a big mess. One of the many things I like about Diana's writing is how I sometimes can relate to what is going on in the story. For me, this occurs more frequently with the mundane events. I do wonder if Diana pulled from her own memories of when her kids were small. Can you imagine Sam Sykes as a toddler all covered with honey?
He probably ate all the precious stones.
Summer. And Claire is there now, but she's not them. Worried about the mess. A little disheartened at the amulet mess, but she quotes Macbeth's witches as she cleans up the amulet disaster. Bree goes to get water to help clean up the
disaster?
Honey.
Did you just say disaster?
I did not. Stop making fun of my pronunciation.
That's what I heard. I heard no T. So
no
I don't
tea?
Know if I don't.
Summer.
I don't. I had no T.
Oh.
I was like, my
so
teeth.
I don't
I
know
don't
if
my
the internet is dropping out.
I don't know if the internet is dropping out with my Wi-Fi.
I don't know if the internet is drunk.
In the middle of your words and making it sound like you said nothing.
It's
it
possible.
It might be.
I'll have to hear
go
on the
home
playback.
Internet. You're drunk.
That's funny. It kind of is. You guys, the internet is drunk. The internet was drunk. Mine was fine, I think. So Summer's internet was very drunk on Thursday. Well, a few days ago. And so we had to postpone
one meg
recording.
Download.
Oof. Nah, girl. It was like,
we only
five.
Need
1.5
to pass. 1.5 to pass. And I could only get less than one.
So Bree goes to get water to help clean up the honey and returns to see Claire looking for something. Oopsie, the sapphire. It was inside Jimmy.
I hear precious stones go down more easily with honey.
That must have been why. That must have been it. They asked Jimmy if he'd eaten it, and he really doesn't. He kind of like turns his head away. I don't think he says no, but he does say, hot, hot, hot. And he has small blisters around his mouth, which is very interesting. And in order to speed up the sapphire processing or digestion, they give him castor bean oil, which is fun.
Oh, it should slide right out.
Michael M. writes, returning from the kitchen with cleaning supplies, Bree finds her mother in search of a raw sapphire. They quickly conclude that it was consumed by the kid. When Jim finally admits to the act, he describes the stone as hot. I did not make note of it the first two times I read the book. However, I am bookmarking this now. Now, I don't know, Michael, if I paid attention to like the very first time, but I sure as heck did on subsequent times, or at least before this close read, because I don't know that I thought forward to the equivalent of book 6 and 7 and 8. That's all I'm going to say. But I definitely noticed this-ish.
But I was concerned. I noticed it. But I was like, I don't understand. They're making it sound like it's the telltale sign of blisters. I was like, what is that supposed to tell me? That tells me nothing. That's weird.
Yeah.
Obviously, it comes into play later. But for them just to kind of throw it out there like, oh, well, don't you know precious stones totally cause blisters when you swallow them?
Yeah.
How is that the telltale? He could have swallowed anything that causes blisters.
Like an herb. Yeah. It's actually more likely that he got into some kind of a stinging nettle or whatever. From what I understand, that does cause blisters. Cause blisters.
Because for me, that was not a telltale. That was not a telltale
no,
sign.
No, it was
of
not
a
give. It was not a
swallowed.
Giveaway. Definitely not. While they wait, Claire compounds medicines and the girls have a chat. Claire chats about not thinking about being a doctor when she was very young or that she hadn't thought about it when she was very young. And they chat about Lizzie and Manfred. So we find out that Lizzie and Manfred are formally betrothed, but they will wait a bit. Claire says, quote, people who know who they are and what they're meant to be, they'll find a way, unquote. She says that even if she lost Jamie and Bree, she'd still have that, at least. And by that, she means being a doctor or being a healer. Bree has thoughts. Was loving Roger and Jemmy enough? Quote, she had a dreadful, hollow feeling that perhaps it was not. Unquote. And Jamie, too, has one. Claire shares with us, quote, a man. And that's no small thing to be.
And that was chapter 78. Next up, chapter 79, entitled Lonesome Me.
Brianna has been, I won't say duped, but encouraged into teaching some of the children of the Ridge. She didn't mind it, especially having them around. Because apparently Roger's like out and about. He's there sometimes. He's gone during the day. It's just Roger's working he's working things out.
In a boot.
Yes, he's working things out. But she felt relieved at the end of the day when it ended and all the kids went home, except for the creeper, Obadiah Henderson, the older brother of one of the girls.
Or maybe that name just sound like a creeper?
Well, I mean, there's Jethro. Like I said, this little section has some great
disrespect. No disrespect to any dudes now named Obadiah, but
I think it's a biblical name. If not biblical, it's like certainly old, certainly not a new or modern name. It's definitely, or at least 20th, 21st. Yes, it's been around. I just mean it's not a new name.
No, it's like a mountain name.
It's a mountain name. There you go. She goes to the spring house to get some buttermilk for some biscuits. And as she's walking back to the cabin, Obadiah is sitting in front of the door, in front of her door.
And it's important to point out that he was supposed to be there to pick up his sisters. That's why he's there every day. And that particular day, his little sister was going off with a friend and she's like, oh, my brother went to Salem. He's not here today. So he's not supposed to be there.
Mm-mm.
His reason for being there is gone.
He puts his hand. Oh, so she comes up. She's like, and she's, you know, making her way toward the door and all that. As she's getting ready to enter, he puts his hand on the small of her back. Oopsie. Mm-mm. Another effer regarding Roger. And by that, I mean, it's not Roger's fault that this guy is a douche canoe. However, if Roger hadn't effed off, he would be there to... At least there's a chance that he would be around to see this and help protect her, whatever. And I'm not getting into feminism and she can do a lot herself. She can. But in this day and time, women were, it was just different. Okay. We know this. Yes, it's fiction, but it's also not fiction as far as, you know,
well,
things.
There were different gender roles then.
Yes. Obadiah says, quote, I hear your husband's not home much these days. Unquote. As it reaches for her face, something hits his arm. It was Jamie. He had been watching and had thrown a knife at him. He tells him to leave and never come back. And so
but don't you want to know what he got her in Salem? He said he bought her something in Salem and we never know what it
was. Funny.
I want to know what he bought her in Salem.
Honestly, I don't think he had anything. I think he was going to try and like kiss her and say, this is what I got for you.
Was it going to be like, this is what I brought you. D's nuts.
Oh, Summer. Maybe. Yes. That's what I'm saying. And Obadiah leaves. He's smart in that respect. And Bree's first words to Jamie when he comes up is, did you have to do that?
I love that he didn't mean to.
Exactly.
He's like,
Jamie's like, I didn't. I only meant to scare him. I didn't mean to actually hit him.
He was supposed to be really impressed by how close I came to hitting him without hitting him. But I hit him instead.
They chat for a little bit and she says it wasn't the first time. So Jamie's like, okay, yo, what up? What's the history? What's that song? What's the buzz telling? What's happening? Or what's the buzz telling? What's happening?
Are you really doing some more Jesus Christ Superstar?
Sorry. I didn't know it was from that. That was like Sesame Street or Reading Rainbow or something. Sorry.
No, it's Jesus Christ Superstar. And I may have just said Superstar, but that's cool.
Wait, what?
I said I may have just said Superstar. I don't know.
Okay.
It sounded like it.
So whatever that was, it came quickly to my brain. It was not in my notes. It just came out just now. But yeah, so Jamie's
it's
like, okay, sorry. I didn't mean, huh?
I said it's always Andrew Lloyd Webber.
No, it's
it comes
not.
Quickly to
there's
your brain. Not.
There's Les Mis. There's Hamilton. There's all kinds of stuff in there. You stop. So Jamie hadn't meant to hit him. No. But he is going to get to the bottom of this. Like, okay, he scared him off. That's what he meant to do. And he's like, never come back, blah, blah, blah. So he doesn't, as far as we can expect or hope. And so they chat. He's like, yo. Exactly. Tell me what's the buzz. Tell me what's happening. What's going on? How long has this been happening, girl? Is this the first time? What's up? And she's like, no, it wasn't the first time. It's been going on since the first week of me teaching these kiddos. Jamie is aghast. Why hadn't she told Roger? She says, quote, it wasn't his problem, unquote. She didn't want to have to ask him to defend her. Jamie replies, quote, what in God's name do you think a man is for, unquote. They discuss men and women and how they might not be that different in different times, meaning, you know, her time and his time, or their time now. She thinks, though, that Roger is different himself since Alamance. Jem.
You think?
Oh, no, not at all. He's the same. Jem, waking up, ends their conversation. Jamie goes to help out and get more buttermilk since he literally spilled the milk. Obadiah had been right, though. He had said a few things to her that I did not capture, but he had said that she seemed, in trying to come on is like not even a good phrase here, but in trying to quote unquote come on to her, he said, "I bet you're lonesome without him here." And she thinks that he was actually right. She is lonesome without Roger. So what do you think about Obadiah? Creeper?
Creeper. In fact, I think that's his middle name.
Obadiah Creeper.
Obadiah Creeper Henderson.
And I forgot. I'm like, was it Johnson? I forgot the name already. I already scrolled down.
Henderson. It's the very last line of the chapter.
Henderson?
Obadiah Henderson. Yeah, it says, that sounds lonesome, Obadiah Henderson had said.
Got
he
it.
Was right. But I mean, this for me, this whole chapter is like classic time traveler issues, right? So what do you do when you have 20th century ideals and you are living in the 18th century? How do you reconcile that? Because even now, I mean, I was born in the 20th century and no. I don't feel like it's anybody's responsibility to defend me. And that's just part of, you know, culture and how culture has changed in that time. So I can totally understand what she's saying. I guess, because I read a lot of historical fiction, understand where Jamie's coming from as well, because that's the typical, you know, gender roles. The woman does this, the man does this. It's the man's responsibility to do this. Mm. So, I mean, it's like, and I can see that, but I think that it's different personally for Roger, because Roger is a 20th century guy as well. So his perception of what Brianna Cannon should mm-hmm. do are different than what Jamie believes she can and should do. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think it's a good thing she's not partnered with a 17th, 18th century dude, because that would have been, you know, real hard on his pride, which it would. Okay. And she's what, 20 years more progressive than Claire?
Are you going by their difference in her? Are you saying the 20 years come from amount of time Jamie and Claire were apart? If you're talking about Claire's place in time.
Claire's place in time, meaning she was born in the 40s.
Claire was not born in the 40s. Claire traveled in the 40s. She was born in 1918.
Okay. Well, she was born in the teens. And so then Brianna was born in what, the 50s?
Late 40s. She came back in 43. Yeah, all that.
But she has matured and it is now the 60s.
68 or something like that.
When she left. So she is a child of, so she's a child of the 60s. So that is a completely different mindset than somebody who grew up in the teens and into the 40s. You know what I mean? So I'm like, she's even more advanced in her thinking than Claire is. And Claire is a lot for Jamie.
That's true.
And she regularly injures his pride. I don't know what Jamie's saying here about how Claire is, you know, not that way with him and thinks of his pride. She didn't used to. She had to get a spanking to think of his pride. Anywho, that was chapter 79. Moving on to chapter 80. This one's a short one entitled Creamed Crud.
Mrs. Bug is serving her fresh crud. Brianna laughs at the name. Crud is the Scots word for curds. Even Jemmy wants some crud. Jamie pops off. It does kind of
sound gross, huh?
Jamie pops off to grab something and then settles down to enjoy his gingerbread and crud. He gives Roger the wee box with the astrolabe. Roger accepts the job of doing some of the surveying and having the results done by the time Fergus goes to the coast before snow comes. So Jamie is going to show him how to do it. Roger will go off and do it and then bring back the results, and then they'll have everything ready to send off, to have it registered, etc., to send with Fergus when he goes to the coast. Then we go to an excerpt from Bree's dream journal again.
Which again, when you listen to it on the audiobook, it's very disturbing.
Brianna does not want Roger to go, but she also wants him to go. She wants it to be quiet. And when she wakes up, he's gone. She's resigned that he will do things his way or not at all. And by that,
she means him working through this whole, the aftermath of Alamance. Like he's gotta, the one thing that he can't do is the thing that Claire did, right? Like Claire helped him medically because he can't, he doesn't have the knowledge or the ability. Plus it's on his neck. He can't really do anything. That was Claire's role. But she's done everything she can and is now up to him in mind, in body, in everything. And it's going to take him a little while, or quite a while, maybe we'll see, to work through this. And so that's what she's resigned to, that he will, he's going to be doing it on his own terms and in his own timeline. Before he had left, they had made love, but she wasn't sure if they'd kissed goodbye before he left.
Maybe she dreamt it. And now moving on to chapter 81. I want you to know that as I glanced at this chapter before announcing it, for a second I thought it said baby killer, but it says bear killer. So chapter 81 is bear killer.
August 1771. There be a visitor. A Native American visitor freaks out Mrs. Bug. Claire greets him. No, not only freaks him, she like runs off.
I mean, to be fair, I'd be alarmed by any stranger in and around my house randomly. That would be alarming. Unexpected guests are always alarming.
Claire greets him, and he has brought a gift for Jamie. Some bear claws. And not the tasty kind.
Those don't even exist yet.
Hey, exactly, which is why I said not the tasty kind. Well, they're there to see Jamie, so she invites him in for tea. Now, when Jamie and Mrs. Bug come back, because, of course, Mrs. Bug freaked out and ran away to get, probably to tattle or get him or complain or whatever. Ah, is someone here? Blah, blah, blah. But she comes back with Jamie. They are accompanied by a dude named Peter Bewley. Now, Peter Bewley is married to a Native American woman, and this woman's brother is the one who came to see Jamie. And his name is Satsawi. He'd come to visit his sister, Peter Bewley's wife, and he told them about the bear problem. And so Peter offers up McDoo, Jamie, to take care of the bear problem because you know his name. He's also known as Bear Killer. Yeah, we got a bear killer here. So the one thing I thought was interesting is every time, and it's very important to listen to, it may or may not have a role in future storylines, but it's very interesting to listen to or read whenever you hear or see the name McDoo, because that is a signifier almost every time you hear it that person was at Ardsmuir with Jamie, correct?
Yes.
So, and we're not giving any background here, but by merely saying Peter uses the term McDoo, it should send a signal to your brain that, oh, so Peter Bewley was another one of the Ardsmuir men, which makes sense, right? Because when this is book five. So in book four and probably early book five, when one of Jamie's goals, once he got the land grant, was to help find, his job is to settle and manage the land, right? That's kind of his agreement, because they want the land to be worked by farmers, by it to be developed. And he can't do it all. He has to get people to do so. And of course, long term, he would hopefully end up getting rents from them. But the first thing he has to do is find people to do that. And one of the easiest, again, low-hanging fruit, not easy in terms of finding necessarily, but easy in terms of once you find them, they probably pretty likely, number one, they're going to trust him. They know him because of his role, right? So they would, for the most part, probably be shoo-ins to help him settle his land, just to be honest about it, to be, I guess, blunt. And so it's interesting, when I read this or heard, I read it, this one, when I take notes, I read, I don't listen, but I read what I'm going to do, I was like, huh, okay, so it makes sense why he's there. He's one of the settlers because he was an Ardsmuir man. That makes sense. But I'm not trying to think more deeply than that, but it always makes me kind of like, you know, my brain goes ding, ding, ding. Okay, another connection to the past or to his past or to their shared past. Michael M. writes, since the measles outbreak and the remaining Tuscarora moving on in Drums of Autumn, there probably hasn't been much in the way of Native American visitors on the ridge since the arrival of the bugs. This is evidenced by the hysteria in Mrs. Bug after meeting a Cherokee in the kitchen.
Oh, right. Yes.
That's great. So what's this problem Peter Bewley wanted to bring to McDo and introduce him to Tsatsawi with? Like, what's going on? Why all this? It's a ghost bear. And it started with regular bear things, perhaps slightly more smart bear things. And then by this time, Bree has joined them and she's humming the Yogi Bear theme, which was funny. Michael M. writes, I really enjoy Diana's sense of humor, both in the books and on Twitter. Here in our journey toward the Cherokee village, where the quest to find the ghost bear will commence, discussion of said bear causes Bree to give an observation, which only Claire understands, of course. And that is the smarter than your average bear, the theme. Let's see if I can remember to add the Yogi Bear theme song to the show notes. I will try and do an embed from YouTube, something like that. Next
up. What is the Yogi Bear theme song?
Huh?
I don't even know what that is. What is the Yogi Bear theme song?
I'll have to go play, find it and play it.
What does it sound like?
I don't know, Summer. I truly have no idea. I just know that you can sing it. Next up. The dogs began disappearing. What?
I don't know what it sounds like. I just know you can sing it. Why even bring it up?
Because they talked about it.
Okay.
Michael M. and Brianna talked about it.
Together?
Summer, don't be a daft.
To each other?
Summer. That's a question for Michael M. I cannot answer for him.
Okay.
So first it was bear things, and then dogs began disappearing, and then a man, and then a child. Now, since this time, four more people had disappeared, and no more bodies had been found. Finally.
And one guy watched his friend get dragged away by a bear.
I don't know if it was a friend.
Was it a hunting partner?
Mm-hmm.
One dude saw one dude get pulled away.
Yes.
Get dragged off by a bear.
But it was, I think, we'll get there. I don't want to use the wrong term. Finally, a dude is hunting the ghost bear. And a hunting party. Oh, my gracious. A hunting party had been sent out. They were unsuccessful. But it was from that excursion that Tsatsawi had come somewhat directly to find Bear Killer. Of course, Jamie. Why do they say it was a ghost bear? Well, it was huge, they say, and pure white. He also
and
makes
polar bears are not indigenous to this area.
Yes. He also makes note of Claire's white skin. Now, they'd heard of White Raven, just not Bear Killer.
We need white people to hunt this white bear.
So they'd heard of White Raven, meaning Claire, but they had not heard, not only just Bear Killer, Jamie. So once the hay was in, so Jamie's like, yes, we'll help, but we can't go right away. We have to get our hay in, do our stuff to keep our land going and all that. And then we can help out. So once the hay was in, Jamie and Claire set off for exorcism. Also present on this trip, Brianna, Jem, the Beardsley twins, and Peter Bewley. Yeah, Brianna's a good shot, but why had Jamie really or also wanted Brianna to come? Quote, I thought it no bad idea for the lass to have friends among the Cherokee, in case she should need a place to go sometime. Unquote. So what he's saying is when the revolution comes or when Jamie and Claire die. Harkening back to the newspaper clipping that got Roger and Bree into this mess, quote, the clipping said no living children. Do you suppose that means Bree and Roger will have gone somewhere before then? Unquote. Keep going, Claire. Keep going. Keep going. You're getting there. The Beardsley twins would also likely be welcomed as during the hunt, as the Cherokee ostensibly viewed twins as good luck. So they're camping for the night. They're settled in at the fire for the final night.
So are they just good luck everywhere they go? Like, because didn't they show up at Hogmanay and First Foot?
Yes.
And that was supposed to be double the luck because there were two brunette people on their porch?
That I don't know, but I do know they showed up. So I guess, maybe they did. Maybe they were. I know they showed up on that night.
They were waiting. They showed up that night. Whoever it was opened the door expecting Roger, and it was the Beardsley twins. Mm-hmm. So, and they were like, that must be double the luck because it was twins.
So they're settled in.
I know that some people feel pretty lucky about having twins. Somebody in this book in particular.
Uh-huh.
Give it time.
They're settled in at the fire for the final night before arriving at the village. And Jamie must have a come to Jesus talk with Peter. He's like, I can't let this go any longer. He says, look, I did kill a bear, but I didn't hunt it. It was in self-defense. So I'm really not sure I'll be much help. Because I know I had this name Bear Killer, but just so you know, this is the truth. And he's like, this bear does.
I can only kill bears that have been hit in the face with a fish.
Yes. And this,
the element of surprise.
And this bear seems rather clever. So then a little bit later on, we find out that some of the times that stuff had been stolen from the village and they had thought it was confession time. Exactly. And they thought it was this clever bear. It had been Josiah Beardsley. Mm-hmm. Josiah also, he's like, yeah, he's actually absolutely having a confession time. And he also tells of a time that he'd seen a smallish black man kill Native American. And they have all of this conversation around the campfire. Now, Summer, that's probably what you were thinking, was someone seeing his friend be taken or attacked.
Well, there was somebody who specifically said one time they saw what there was one of the attacks that was witnessed. I will find it. Hang on.
I think it was. I don't know who witnessed it. Who could then tell us? Oh well, yeah. Josiah tells of a time he'd seen a smallish black man kill a Native American, and he had hit. I think he bashed his head in or something. But then along comes a bear. Josiah climbs up a tree and looks down, and the bear's going after the dead dude. So I think the smallish black man, we believe, was an escaped slave or maybe a freedman. We don't know yet. I believe he ran off. That's what I believe that they had said.
It says, he and one of his friends were sitting up at night keeping watch whilst the other slept. "'Twas just past moonrise," he said, when he got up to make water. He turned back to the fire just in time to see his friend being dragged off, stone dead, with his neck crushed in the jaws of the thing itself.
Yes, but who's the narrator? Tsatsawi? Could have been Tsatsawi.
Tsatsawi was with them, Peter said, lifting his finger towards his brother-in-law. He and one of his friends. So Tsatsawi saw.
Okay.
Tsatsawi.
So it's okay. Michael M. writes, the four spirits are not whiskey, brandy, rum, and wine. Alas. After Peter Bewley describes how the Cherokee shamans believe there is a spirit that lives in each of the four cardinal directions, each spirit being a different color, Jamie replies, that's better like the four erts, Peter, is it no? Well, it is then, Peter agreed, nodding. Odd, no? That the Cherokee should get a hold of the same notions as we Heathlanders have. This reminded me of how Jamie first noticed the similarities with the Tuscarora back in Drums of Autumn, chapter 15, when he earned the name Bear Killer. And Jamie and Bree, they agree, okay, it's time to get some sleep. We will take different shifts of the watch. Jamie and Bree take first watch. Now, Bree is a little more worried about Roger being out and about after all this talk about a demon or a bear. Jamie comforts her by saying that he'd waited 20 years for Claire, and prayer had helped him get through. And even if he'd known she were dead, quote, then I would still have lived and done what must be done. So will you, unquote. And of course, that's not about getting through the night. That's about her and Roger.
And that was chapter 81, finishing off this episode with chapter 82 entitled A Darkening Sky.
And we're back with Roger. In case we were all wondering what Roger was doing while Jamie and Claire et al. Were traipsing around the backwoods looking for a ghost bear. He's a surveyan. And he's got Clarence for company. He's not too comfortable being out walking around in all this overgrowth, and he wants to get back to open sky. He also wants peace, inner peace. And this trip had given him that. And as he's taking his sightings for the surveying, songs, different songs come to his mind. Back with Claire et al., they arrive at the Cherokee village, and there's a gathering there with the shaman, the only person who was interested in the shaman, seemingly, was Jemmy. He was reacting to the, my aim is not to belittle their ceremony, but Jemmy, of course, has no idea what's going on. So he can't, there's no way he could take this thing seriously. He doesn't have the developmental capability to do so. So to him, what he was seeing and probably hearing, although he doesn't have the language to characterize it as something like theatrics. For him, it was like a performance, right? Because that's all he's seeing is a man speaking a language he doesn't understand and making motions and then the smoke and people turning around. Yeah. So for him, it was like pageantry, right? He was seeing this really interesting thing that he had never seen before. So of course it really interested Jemmy. And she thinks, well, it might be the shaman or only him, but that they'd done this ritual or ceremony several times with no good results. Of course, this is regarding with the bear, right? Because they had sent out hunting parties several times and still had not found the bear or killed the bear. Jamie and the other hunters were blessed by the shaman. Then there's a noise like wings above them. And that's very, very, I really completely shortened that description up, but it is birds. A huge amount of birds, flocks and flocks and flocks of birds fly over them. After a bit, the Cherokee begin to grab weapons and knock the birds out of the sky. You know, this is like, it's like fast food. And until it was over, until the birds have flown over, she is not just from what she has seen, but from what she sees of the birds. And I believe she picks one up. She believes it was a passenger pigeon. And do you know what the significance of that would have been, Sam?
Are they like, no.
Okay. So I don't I know. I don't up, know no. the year. We can Google it. But passenger pigeons were hunted until they became extinct in the early 20th century. So.
So we're witnessing the extinction. Well, of not the extinction. Pigeon.
She went back 200 years. They were not extinct yet. But she was seeing something that she may have never seen before, but she had probably read descriptions of them. But yeah, it's one of those times.
This could have been the extinction point.
No,
we don't know.
It happened in the early 20th century. That's documented. They were used during the World Wars.
Gugh.
My point here is that It's one of the moments, it's one of these kind of out of time moments or things that if you...
You mean like when she sees Nessie?
Kind of. Even though like, okay, Nessie, well, okay, some people have their opinions. Nessie is, at least not yet, hasn't been proven not to be fictional. Passenger pigeons were absolutely real.
You're having a struggle today.
Why do you say that?
With the word pigeon.
Oh, did I have a problem again? What did I say?
Uh-huh.
What did I say?
Pigeon.
Oh, stop it.
Pigeon.
Passenger pigeons are absolutely extinct, but they were used and existed in the early 20th century. So these types of little, and they're not small, but I mean, they're not really that important to the story. It doesn't change the next tilt through book 8, 9, 10. It doesn't affect the story, but it's these little things where the out of time person, right? So Claire is the out of time person in this scene. When she sees something or recognizes something as in her time gone,
And she has these little, Diana gives us these little moments of, just kind of, not only out of time, but also, it's sad, right? Because we drove the species to extinction. So, and she sees one here. She doesn't know full show, but she is like pretty darn, pretty sure. She's pretty much convinced.
They were pretty distinctive. Have you seen them?
Yes. I mean, like I've seen, I'm
they're
sure.
They're kind of like the robin. I mean, the pigeon's answer to a robin. Aww. They have a red chest.
Yeah, that's so pretty. Yeah, I've seen I can't tell you where, but I'm sure I've seen in different museums or something where, you know, I've seen a stuffed bird, a stuffed version of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it says that the last passenger pigeon, thought to be the last passion. Wow, I'm having a hard time too.
Say it again, girl.
Martha, thought to be the last passenger pigeon, died on September 1st in 1914.
Aww.
At the Cincinnati Zoo.
So if that is true, I mean, I believe that was recorded, then Claire, born in 1918, never saw one unless it was in pictures and stuffed, yeah.
At a museum, yeah.
Yep.
Taxidermy.
Ooh. So the next day, the hunt. Bree leaves Jem behind in the village because, of course, they need her to shoot. Claire stays behind as well. Now, they'd brought 25 gallons of her honey and other things, but by the evening, she'd been able to trade and she had gotten wild ginseng, cohosh, and chaga. Apparently, that's a thing that could even maybe potentially cure cancer. Like, apparently, that was a big deal.
And an assload of sunflower oil.
Right. She did the honey. She traded straight for sunflower oil. So 25 gallons of honey for 25 gallons of sunflower oil. She wants to make soap for them.
Herbal essence. Here we go.
Yes, there you go. She wants to make soap for them at the ridge, as well as to sell to help save up for Leary's blood money.
Leary.
I was about to say. So Summer, what do you think about Leary? Tell us again, but you already answered that. And there's work in the orchard as well. In chatting with the Cherokee women, Claire learns that they were aware of the black men who lived in the woods. They'd even followed them for several days, but didn't think maybe they were...
Well, they clearly didn't follow that one.
No, but they didn't think maybe that they were...
The one who goes around clobbering ones in the head.
So some people had mentioned that they might be demons, but others thought that maybe they weren't demons because when they followed them back to where they were living... They didn't live very well, and they thought, because demons would surely have lived better than that. So that was slightly funny. They wouldn't bother them for now, they decided. So the hunters had returned to the village. So they wouldn't bother them for now. So Jamie and Brianna and the hunters and everyone who had gone returned to the village. They had game with them, but they had found no bear. We find out that the Cherokee have women who will also fight and hunt. And... The hunting party says that they had found footprints. They think they have an idea where the ghost bear had made its den. The plan now is to set fire to the canebrake to drive the bear out to the other side. Now, since there would be game and other things there, they'd invited another village to also come and take part. So it's kind of like the birds flying over gave them fast food birds. Them burning the canebrake is going to give them an opportunity to have fast food, like bigger game. So a few days pass, the other villagers arrive, and they set off to start the fire. Now, Claire wants to remember to ask about the components of Nyawinne's amulet, especially about the bat. Sungi, someone she's there with, tells her a Cherokee story about bats. Now, in the middle of the story, they smell smoke. Now, they expect to smell smoke because they know what's being done, but this is rather strong, and it's a little bit worrisome, and they see that rain clouds were coming, but they would not reach them soon enough. So they're on the move. They are evacuating, but they're not like terrified yet. They are just being fast and quick, but they're not running. So they're on the move. women gathering children and gathering food that was drying, anything that they could quickly take with them. Claire doesn't know where Jemmy is.
How did they not foresee this potential?
Oh, when you're saying, girl, that's a good question.
When they thought, hey, let's light up the cane break or whatever it was called. Let's just light that on fire. That can't end poorly. We don't live right up the hill. There's no way this is going to affect us in a negative manner.
Yeah, it's a good question. So Claire does not know exactly where Jemmy is, but she's assuming that he was with one of the girls who had been watching him. She finds him in a house, sound asleep with some other kids. She wakes him up and takes him with her. The evacuation is on. She goes, gets on Judas and has Jemmy with her, and they are off. She tries to follow the other man on the horse in front of her, and other riders were coming. Jamie and Bree are there. They hadn't found the bear. Unfortunately, Jemmy sees his mom and goes over to her or is given to her. And Claire goes back. She's like, I am not losing that damn sunflower oil. So Claire goes back for the oil, loads him up, and they're off. It's a tag team between Judas, who hated thunder, and Gideon, who hated following any other horse.
Oh my God. It's like your cats.
Uh-huh.
It's like your cats. Two different issues.
Well, that is true, but no one hates thunder.
No one hates thunder? No, I'm not talking about
my cats. Thunder.
No, I know. I'm not referencing them
I
in
know,
that.
No, but it's just it took a second for me to understand what you're saying.
I'm just saying they have two issues that don't always work together. Two special needs animals, yes.
So it ends up being, as I said, it's Judas and Gideon, which means Jamie and Claire and the sunflower oil. Now Brianna is not with them. She's off. She took off in a, you know, following others. She's with others. But Jamie and Claire are together. I mean, she's with Jem, but she's not alone with him.
Mm-mm.
Now she Jamie and
friends.
Claire,
it was everything Jamie wanted.
That is true.
In an emergency, she has
that
friends.
True. That's true. And here's an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So they are alone, if you will. They're together and they need to get shelter. So they tie up the horses and they go off to find shelter. They find the remnants of a man killer. And this is, as Jamie explains to Claire, this is their own word for the Cherokee's own term for their sentry. So people who would be stationed out at certain intervals radiuses, certain distances away from the village all around it, whom if they saw there was trouble coming, or whether it was a lot of people or animals, I'm guessing more around people, they could then rush back into the village and say, look, I saw someone, or I saw this XYZ in this direction. We're about a day ahead of them or whatever. So just sentries, right? To keep watch. So where were Jemmy and Bree? I just wrote that question. The thunder is a booming, but Jamie and Claire will wait as it's not yet safe to go out on the trail. As the fire travels, she thinks on Roger and where he was and the bear.
And that was chapter 82. Join us next week when we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along with chapters 83, entitled Wildfire, chapter 84, entitled Burnt to the Bones, 85, Hearthfire, 86, There's a Hole in the Bottom of the Sea, 87, On Guard, 88, Roger Buys a Sword, 89, y'all, we are packing them in, 89, The Moons of Jupiter, and 90, Danger in the Grass. We are on track to finish this read-along and this book for the season 5 premiere. So get your reading done this week, people, and we will have all of those chapters recapped for you here next week. And if you want to continue the conversation, join us on our Facebook group page at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Sorry, my mouse isn't working. It's too slow.
It hasn't.
And not my mouth. You my mouse.
You be nice.
That's mean. And too honest. Stop it.
Okay.
You really thought I said mouse? Mouse?
Uh-huh. My mouth isn't working. And I was like, it hasn't been.
Stop. We invite you to consider supporting us on Patreon. To find out more, you can go to www.patreon.com/outlanderpod.
So that's another year under our belt, you guys. This is the last episode before Christmas. One more Christmas in the books. So thank you guys all for joining us on this rather lengthy read-along journey and our episode journeys, and for getting us through one more Christmas.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.